Now, RNIB is a charity that is changing and trying to get itself more in tune with what you need. And that applies to the Technology for Life team as well. And there's been some changes there to create a much more encompassing service for you. And to tell us more, we have Mark Evans, who is a Technology for Life coordinator. Hello.
Hello. Hello. Lovely to be on the show.
And some changes ahead. You've been busy.
Yes, very much so. Firstly, people may remember how the old service was. If they don't, I'll quickly give it a refresh. So there was the four of us, there was myself, there was Mohammed Atif, there was Madeline Mann, and there was Paul Porter. And we were supporting the whole of the country over the phone, over email, you know, responding to people's voicemails and going out to the big events like Site Village, TechShare, those kind of things, working with the internally with the products and solutions teams. So that is now no longer. But the great news is the Technology for Life service remains, and it's split into sort of three strands now. The great news for everybody, first of all, before I go into the strands, is there's actually 12 coordinators, and each coordinator is responsible. This is very exciting for each region of the country. So myself, for example, I'm responsible for the East Midlands, which is exciting and also scary at the same time, I'll be honest. And within that, it's all the work, all the technology work that's going on within that area. So what are the three strands? The three strands of work now consist as follows. The first being to work with local societies and partners, so to help them understand the different levels of technology that are out there and the options, and most importantly, the accessibility that's in different technology for customers. Because it's all well and good having something. The most important thing is, can I use it? What does it do? And how easy it is for you to use? So we're trying to simplify the process for people. We're also trying to bring together technology from our partners, as well as the stuff that we're doing, to take to these societies for the blind and make sure that more equipment can hopefully get out there to them so that more people can see it through the networking contacts we have. So that's the first strand. A second strand, which is also very exciting and much needed, is our beloved volunteer service. So it's a case of looking at the volunteers we have got, trying to understand what skills they've got, what knowledge they've got, where their ambitions lie, what time they've got, and putting this all into play into a plan, but also a training plan for those volunteers. So each coordinator is also responsible for that and developing that going forward, which is very exciting. The volunteers, obviously, we realise are so, so important for our level of service. And there has been a bit of a postcode lottery. So the idea being that through the training and support that there will be this postcode lottery will evaporate. It's not going to happen overnight, but it is our aim to try and achieve that. And third and finally, it's obviously the beloved telephone, email and support service for our customers getting through to us. But it won't be, as I say, the four of us all the time that you used to. There will be another eight colleagues, but there will always be four people on the phones, emails, and taking care of the back end sort of responsibilities, as it were.
All these changes are to make the service work a bit more efficiently and be better for the service user. What are the real benefits of this, do you think?
I think the real benefits are that, first of all, we're always going to have a maintained telephony service at the core. So people can still get in touch with us via the usual channels. And that's there for people if they want a phone service. Secondly, the major benefit is going to be the depth and breadth of the volunteers' knowledge and confidence and skills, which means more people will hopefully become volunteers and more volunteers will be retained. Their confidence and their understanding of technology will be greater, so they'll be able to help more customers in their homes. So people who have got sight loss, for example, and can't get out because they've got physical disabilities or other issues that I speak to. I've got some lovely customers with these issues. It's very frustrating that they'll actually be able to get the help and the support that they need. And thirdly, having that work in societies for the blind means they'll be able to actually put on dedicated technology mornings or events and sort of be self-managing and then come back to us when they want perhaps a top-up or want us to train them on a new piece of technology which then they then embellish into the range. So geographically, the idea being that there is less gaps, that there is more support, and that the RNIB is kind of helping to guide the customers, the volunteers, and the societies to make the best choices and to be the strongest they can be for the customers. I think that's the most important thing, that the customer is obviously, it sounds really corny for me to say this, but is at the heart of what we want to do. And obviously, if people are saying to us, right, well, our society isn't supporting us because of X, Y, and Z, you know, we need to get in touch and then we need to try and have these conversations with the society and say, well, you know, there's 20 people that want training on iPads, there's 10 people that want training on JAWS, there's, you know, 30 people that want to know about smartphones and setting up of getting online. So it's about meeting the customer's expectations, and we want the customers to tell us so we can help support them through these three strands.
And I suppose if you're covering a certain area, there's a continuity there for the customer as well, to a degree, isn't there?
There is. But also, for example, if one of us is ill and we have to go and then support at another event, we can work with the contacts that we have in that other region, the network managers of those regions, and the connect facilitators, so the people who are out in the community, feeding us that data back and actually having those links for us. So we've not got to remember every single detail in terms of every single bit of every single society or every single customer. You know, the groundwork is already laid. It's then looking at, okay, this is the way in. What options have we got? What do people want? What's affordable? And trying to build strategies that really benefit people, I guess, and consistently looking at what people want. It's no good as saying, right, we're going to come in and sort of be the big brother, be the big bad wolf to the volunteering section, to customers individually, or to groups of customers at societies or organizations, and say, right, this is how we're going to do things. It's not about that. It's about them having that two-way conversation with us and saying, we'd love to do this. We think people are interested in this. We've talked to our customers and they want a session on this, and building that forward. And the idea being that we don't just go and present to the individuals, the societies, or with the volunteers. We're training people and we're making those decisions to train people and make people specialists so that they can then retrain and cascade that information down. So they come back to us, as I say, as a last resort. Unless something is new or something happens, still they can contact us, but that there is a structure to getting our support.
And I think to remember, you're listening at home and you're thinking, I'm not really that technically minded, and there's a couple of things that I need to know, but they just seem like probably silly questions. There aren't any silly questions, are there?
There's never a silly question. There's probably Mark's silly answer, but there and the rest of the team will perhaps have a tongue in joke, because we like that with customers, and we like to have we obviously serve them, and we know our regulars and we know what their personalities are like, and we try and make the service as tangible as possible. There's definitely no silly questions. It's always good to look. It's always good to check. The helpline is there for people to find out about where their local society is, and if there is a resource centre as well, there's that service for people. If they can't get a hold of us and us working with them to help you. So it's a conversation in that way. And I think it's really important that the customers feel that we're trying to do as much as we possibly can within our capacity and within budget to support them as best as possible.
So how do we get in touch with you then?
Okay, so getting in touch is really easy. If people have access to the internet, they can still go through the usual channel, which is tfl@rnib.org.uk, which is the inbox. So tfl@rnib.org.uk, which is the inbox, and encourage people to do that. But also they can get contact with us directly if they want to, 0207 391 2280, and contact us that way. If they're unsure, obviously because of hours, if people are not there, they can still phone the helpline on the 0303 123 9999, and they'll actually forward us a message which goes to our voicemails, and then we'll try and action those voicemails as quickly as possible. If a person wants to get hold of us and we're, you know, they're not sure if we're in or we're at an event or whatever the situation is, so we're there in the best and most varied way to help everybody.
Well, it sounds like a lot of changes, and a lot of changes for the better, hopefully. Mark Evans from the Technology for Life team, thank you so much for getting us up to speed.
Thank you very much. Take care. Bye.